kiss your lips a thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, video streaming and broadcasting from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you from all over the world. A lot of people listen to this program over the telephone because they travel, and therefore you don't have to be by a computer to listen to it over the internet or at a land-based station, what is called a terrestrial station. Write down this phone number, keep it with you in case you ever are out and about and you need to listen to the show. Just call this number, 712-432-7231, 712-432-7231, and that way you're tuning right in. Now, today we have no guests, but we have lots of information on health and nutrition, why seniors don't eat. It's complicated. Antioxidant-rich pomegranate juice may aid blood sugar management for diabetics. Remember what I've been saying a long time? We've been focusing too much on fish as a source of the omega-3 fatty acids, and myself and others take plant-based. Well, there's a big study that was just finished. I'm going to report on what is the best source of the omega-3 fatty acids, and this is published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Well, hurrah, hurrah for the vegans. Double-blind, placebo-controlled study shows selenium cuts cancer rates by 41%. Now, this is odd, and I'll explain why it's odd in a commentary. Exercise before school may reduce ADHD symptoms, and a lot more on health and healing. And because of the environmental summit coming up on Sunday, I'm putting more energy today into environmental issues, including how we could look at our grass today and not realize that it's going to change. In fact, almost all of our grass is going to be GMO grass. Didn't know about it? I'll give you the latest on that. Also, I want to talk about dozens of children fear dead after being injected with a tainted measles vaccine in Syria. How a mysterious EVD68 vaccinated children could be more vulnerable. If you haven't heard about it, I'll give you the insights on it. And also, if time permits, in Vaccines We Trust by Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, MD. Plus today, we're going to look at the Pentagon is the largest polluter in the world. Wow. That's the elephant in the room that no one's paying attention to. Sarah Flanders has an important article. I'll quote it from Global Research. Also, unseen toll, the wages of millions are seized to pay past debts. And they're even taking money from senior citizens because they co-signed on loans for grandchildren or children. We'll deal with that. Also today, I will have several short pieces, one about what I talked about 2 weeks ago on this program, and that was asset forfeiture. That means that anywhere in the United States, you can be driving and police pull you over, and they can take your cash. They'll ask you a question. Can you prove that the cash you have on you or in your car was not from drug deals or money laundering? Now, there's no way in the world to prove that unless you have a bank receipt, but that just means you took the bank money out of the bank. It doesn't mean that how the money got into the bank. And as a result, they'll seize your money. Now, how much of that goes into the police's personal pockets as theft, and how much is stolen by the police and then used by their local departments, it's staggering, between $1.2 and $2.2 billion a year. Huge. But this isn't me telling you this. This is the Canadian government warning citizens of Canada who travel the United States. This is on their official website. We'll hear a short segment about that. And we have a couple more really important segments to share with you. So let's get started. I counsel a lot of people of all ages. Those who are senior citizens frequently are undernourished. Why? Talk with them. Ask them, are you eating? Are you drinking liquids? More often than not, the answer is no. Why not? And they don't know why. They just don't pay attention to it. But a big study has just come out on this very issue, and it shows that, this is from NewsRx Health, quote, more than half of older adults who visit emergency departments are either malnourished or at risk of malnutrition, but not because of lack of access to health care and critical illness or dementia. No. Despite clear signs of malnutrition or risk of malnutrition, more than three-quarters had never previously been diagnosed with malnutrition. And that's according to this newest study. Quote, we were surprised by the levels of malnutrition or risk of it among cognitively intact seniors visiting the ER, and even more surprised that most malnourished patients had never been told they were malnourished. Now, what were the primary causes? And by the way, seniors visit ERs about 20 million times a year. Quote, depression and dental problems. A patient 65 years and older, malnutrition was 60% because they just weren't eating enough. Now, here's my take on this, because I've seen a lot of this. In our society, because I've traveled throughout the whole world, and I do not see it as common as I do in the United States, the older you get, the less relevant you are. We are such a youth-based society. We are a sex-based society. We objectify the person, we objectify their sex, we objectify wealth, and we objectify class. You never see a television program showing people not walking a red carpet. You see red carpet, that gets the high votes, that's the high attention span, the superstars competing, whether it's the World Series, the NBA, or the Oscars, or the Super Bowl. If you looked at most people, they never have one of those red carpet days in their life. They have joy in their life. But when you have enough people convincing you that every day you get older, you're less relevant, less valued, less important. And then one day, even if you were extremely powerful, and I just talked about this in my lecture this week, we have several million people who are now retired, living in exclusive communities in West Palm Beach, in Naples, Florida, in, where they have more golf courses than any place else in the world per population, in Sedona, Palm Springs. What do? Well, I'll tell you what doesn't happen in their lives. The phone doesn't ring asking for their input and advice. When the phone rings, it's to invite them to a charity to give a check for some cause. But more often than not, they're bored to death. Because at the height of their activity, they were the champions of industry. They're the ones that, when they went into a restaurant, they had a table reserved for them, no matter how crowded it was. Because they were the person. They were the go-to person. They were like a magnet. Because power magnetizes our attention if we are a part of the normal social fabric of a society. The more powerful you are, the more attention you're given. The more you're deferred to, as if somehow you have almost alchemy powers. You can turn normal people into superstars. You can turn small investments into mega wealth. And you can turn common talent into idolized talent. And I've seen it. Some of my friends have been those people. One of the most powerful people in the history of Hollywood was a person that I gave their first job to. They worked for me for 3 years, then wanted a small loan to go to California. I gave them the $3,000 and never gave it back, but they became one of the most powerful people in Hollywood. So over the ensuing years until his retirement, I had a chance to see the people learn the true behind the story without any veneer, without any sugarcoating. What's it like in these meetings? How do you select these scripts? How do you select the talent? Why do you decide to do a particular film? And I would get all these very honest answers. So it's always different when you see the truth of something. Not that it's good or bad. I'm not making a moral judgment. I'm just saying it's always nice to see what's behind the facade, because it is the illusion in our society that we embrace, the fantasy of what might be. And then when we see the reality, we're frequently disappointed. So in any case, one day these people retire and they get their big pensions and party, and then it's over. If they went back in that restaurant the day after they had retired, that seat would no longer be theirs. They'd just be another one of the people dining. Because the moment you're no longer in a position of green light to say yes, to be a door opener, the light turns off. You no longer have that 1,000-watt glow. You are just a normal, everyday, average person. And it's very hard for people because they can't turn off the mind. Now, I think that's a great opportunity for those of us who are looking for people to be a part of causes that need organizing, that need funding, that need organization, management, and promotional skills. These people have it. They've succeeded. And yet, it's rare to hear that they're being invited in on projects because we assume that they're all going to be pro-corporate. And that's not always true. I've seen people, spoken with people, who once they retire, they no longer have an allegiance to a corporate entity, to making a profit for their shareholders. Therefore, they can look at the larger issues and align themselves. I personally know people that have come to demonstrations who were captains of industry. And you wouldn't have known them, but they were there. And then they open up their Rolodexes and look at all the people they know who can get things rolling. So I believe our next move as an environmental movement is to start reaching out to gated retirement communities to get them reinvolved. Now that gets to my larger issue of why so many seniors are malnourished, because they get depressed. Depression is epidemic among aging people in this society, but it doesn't start when you retire. It starts early in life when you wake up one day and you're working as hard as you can. You don't feel fulfilled. You keep yourself physically, intellectually, emotionally exhausted by being overly responsible, certainly not lazy, not uncaring, not ungiving, very giving, over the top giving. But you still don't feel fulfilled. There has to be something else, you think. So we start this very methodical search for someone to be with, some place to be, some job to have, some friends to share. And it still isn't enough. And as a result, we're very remiss in taking that inner journey, the spiritual journey. So what happens is, more often than not, as each thing's changed in a person's life, as each chapter, a child leaving for college, the empty nest syndrome, a person realizing you're with a person that you really don't have anything to share that's intimate and wonderful and exciting and exhilarating, and you didn't create a wonderful friendship, and as a result, you're like strangers sharing the same space. When you realize that the loyalty you gave your company is not enough to keep you employed, they want to hire someone at half your wages, because they don't have to pay them for seniority or union fees, and they can bring them in from India, don't blame them. They're not at fault. The people in India are looking, like you would and anyone else would, to get an education, to get skilled, to master something, and then to work where they can. So they're coming in and taking our jobs. And that's unfortunate, because corporate America is not honest about how many of these people are coming in. It'll be about 8 million. Millions are already here. And what it means is that those people who have been very loyal and focused on helping their companies are going to be sacrificed, and have been and are and will be. And so there's more than enough reasons to feel that you're no longer in control of your dreams, your ideals, or your life. So you get depressed. It's not a brain chemical imbalance. You shouldn't be diagnosed based upon having some psychiatric disorder. You don't. You're simply dealing with an emotion that will come and go depending upon the type of support you give yourself and the kind of changes you're willing to make, as well as those around you who can support you and help you in that transition. What we need in our society is we need people to help us in transitions. Transitions after the death of a loved one, transitions after a divorce, transitions if we don't get the ideal job and we had to take one that was below our educational level in a field other than ours. And as a result, we have young people who are depressed. We have people in their 20s depressed because they worked so hard to get into college, they ran up so much debt, and now they're living at home, and they can't feel good about that. They don't want to live on the street, so they live at home, and their parents don't want to live on the street. The parents are working hard, but the parents now have assigned the debt. And we all know that standing outside that door, wanting to come in, the moment you miss a payment, or the people are going to give you compounding interest rates, take away your home, and take away your bank account. So we have to be realistic about we need a completely new social model. We have a new way of knowing how to deal with issues. But it's not permeating through the mass media, which is dominated by those people who are still in control, who control everything. They walk down the street, they have the protection of society. They're considered the gifted ones, the ones on television, the ones in Congress, the ones in the White House, the ones in the Supreme Court. And yet they're just people, just as fallible as anyone else, just as capable of making errors as anyone else. We all make errors. The question is not, can we make errors? There is no perfection in the human being. Perfection was there when we were born. All those trains of cells working in perfect harmony, all we had to do is honor it. And as best we try, we then separate from that perfection to degrees of maladaptive social conditioning. Then one day we wake up and we are greedy, or we are selfish, or we are narcissistic, or we are distanced from the world we live in. And then we get depressed. And then the older we get, if nothing's changed, then we just feel we're just waiting to die. When you're over the age of 50 and you're over the age of 60, let me tell you something. A lot of your thoughts are about your own mortality, especially if you've not lived and have and are willing to share a legacy of helping others, which is really fulfilling in one's life. So that's one of the reasons that people are not eating. Because when I sit with people and I try to re-encourage them, find something they can re-stimulate their interest in life, but this time put themselves at the center of their life. You see, one of the problems we have is we always put ourselves outside of being the center of our life. It's always someone, it's a job, it's a relationship, it's responsibilities, it's something else that is the center, to which then that becomes more important in our lives. Or it's a disease. You make the cancer more important, the AIDS more important, the dementia more important in your life, and it should never be. No disease, no state of economic or social placement should ever be more significant than our life. So I try to encourage people in every way I can to appreciate where they're at in life and start over. And I believe that as a nation, on every level, in every institution, in every paradigm, we really need to start over. Then they'll eat because they'll know the significance of eating, and they'll drink liquids. They won't be dehydrated, and they'll feel that no matter how long they're going to live, there's still a vitality ahead of them. The best is not behind them. But our hospitals are just looking at the physical symptoms and the physical phenomena of not eating and say, well, it's depression and dental. Their teeth are bad, therefore they're not chewing. I know a lot of people who have bad teeth and they're eating all they need. We've just lost our sense of purpose in life, and we have to get it back. Next up, pomegranates, rich in polyphenols, can help with diabetes. Now, this is published in Nutrition Research. It's done at Jordan University of Science and Technology, where, by the way, it was the Middle East that gave us so much of what we know now about the pomegranate. And, quote, they're talking about how results are encouraging when the pomegranate juice is used by type 2 diabetes patients. That's good. There are thousands of studies on the pomegranate. We can add reducing blood glucose levels, which can help you. By the way, when you reduce the blood glucose levels, you're going to protect your brain cells. You're going to protect your heart, the arteries, the veins. So keep the blood sugar down to normal and save yourself premature aging. Also, the best omega-3 fatty acids. This is from a major report as presented by the Natural Society. Quote, most of us by now know that omega-3 fats are essential for preventing breast cancer, slowing the aging process, halting skin cancer progression, increasing cognitive function, and improving cardiovascular health. But two substantial medical reviews have deduced that omega-3 fatty acids from plants reduce the incidence of heart disease and heart attacks, while fish oil has only a slight effect. The most recent of these two reviews, coming from scientists at Harvard Medical School, joined with experts from several other prestigious universities, purports that increased consumption of alpha-linolenic acid, the type found in plants, resulted in a 14% total reduction of heart attacks and associated cardiovascular events. This was on 251,000 human subjects and over a long period of time. And then there was another article published in the Journal of the American Medical Association coming from Greece's Ioannina University Medical School and Hospital. And they found the same thing, that you have a lower risk of all-cause death, all causes, no matter what, plus cardiac death, sudden death, myocardial infarction, and stroke relative to the plant-based omega-3 fatty acids. So for all of the vegans in this audience who've been using the flaxseed, walnuts, avocados, hemp powder and oil, you've been on the right side of that issue. And also, a double-blind placebo-controlled study shows that selenium, an important micronutrient, quote, cuts cancer rates by 41%. Wow. That's a big cut. This is from Cornell University and the University of Arizona, show that those who took selenium for at least 10 years had almost 41% rate of cancer less than those taking a placebo. So that is good. Now, where do you get selenium? Well, you get a lot of selenium in Brazil nuts. That's one of the best, highest amounts, if not the highest amount. And sunflower seeds are good. Mushrooms give you some as well. And finally, there is a fruit, cupucu. Now, here's what they say about this. It has a botanical name, Theobroma, a genesis of the cacao, and the there's two ways of pronouncing it. One in the native is cupuhosu, but if you looked at the spelling, K-S-C-U-P-U-A-C-U, you'd never spell it, pronounce it that way. So either way, they'll get it. It's a watermelon-sized Amazonian superfruit, and it's renowned for its capacity to dissolve body fat, and it's very promising, but now there's new research that it can attack colon cancer cells. And that's important, but also lowers cholesterol, lowers blood pressure, eases pain and inflammation. It's rich in bioflavonoids, phytonutrients. It's been used for centuries in the Amazon to promote energy, help your heart. It's rich in vitamin C, and it can also help reduce the stress hormone cortisol. And that is related to body fat. So, there you have it. Write it down. It is spelled C-U-P-U-A-C-U. In the native, it is cupuasu. So, that's it. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now, a few thoughts on our environment. And one is the Pentagon, because this is something no one's talking about, and they should. This is from Sarah Flounders from Global Research. It's called, the article's entitled, The Pentagon, the Climate Elephant. There is an elephant in the climate debate that by U.S. demand cannot be discussed or even seen. This agreement to ignore the elephant is now the accepted basis of all international negotiations on climate change. It is well understood by every possible measurement that the Pentagon, the U.S. military machine, is the world's biggest institutional consumer of petroleum products and the world's worst polluter of greenhouse gas emissions and many other toxic pollutants. Yet the Pentagon has a blanket exemption in all international climate agreements. Ever since the Kyoto Accords or the Kyoto Protocol negotiations in 1998, in an effort to gain U.S. compliance, all U.S. military operations worldwide and within the U.S. are exempt from measurement or agreements on reduction. The U.S. Congress passed an explicit provision guaranteeing U.S. military exemptions called it was on May 20th, 1998. The complete U.S. military exemption from greenhouse gas emissions calculations include 1,000 U.S. bases in more than 130 countries around the world, 6,000 military bases in the United States, and all aircraft carriers and jet aircraft. Also excluded are its weapons testing and all multilateral operations such as the Joint U.S. Command NATO Military Alliance and AFRICOM, the U.S. Military Alliance now blanketing in Africa. So, not a single word is allowed to be said about curtailing all of the pollution from our military-industrial complex. That should be at the top of a lot of agendas to challenge them. This is about our grass. This is from Christina Sarich from Natural Society. Quote, while many of us rely upon grass-fed beef as a source of healthy, properly raised meat, that option of healthy eating may just move down a peg. Why? Not because cattle may have to switch to GM grain, but rather because cattle may be forced to indulge in genetically modified grass. The Scotts Miracle-Gro Company, which created genetically modified Roundup Ready Kentucky bluegrass, has announced that it will conduct field trials at the homes of Scotts employees. What's more, they can do so without any government oversight because there are no laws that prohibit or limit the planting of GMO grass. We already know that Roundup Ready crops have been linked via independent peer-review studies to inflammatory, geotoxic, neurotoxic, carcinogenic, and endocrine-disrupting diseases, as well as infertility. Roundup also chelates important minerals in the body, robbing you of your good health. Now, cattle will graze on GMO Kentucky bluegrass, and people will ingest the Roundup chemicals sprayed on the cow's favorite grass. You can guess who's behind this latest GMO development. Scott is Monsanto's exclusive agent for the marketing and distribution of consumer Roundup. So, be aware of that. Now, first and foremost, I do not believe that people should be eating any beef. There's no need nutritionally whatsoever to eat any animal protein, dairy or fish, chicken or beef, lamb, pork, none. In fact, in the study that many of you are very familiar with called the Egg Project, and it was called the Egg Project because the egg is considered the most perfectly absorbed, completely absorbed, and utilized source of protein. It's the highest standard of net protein utilization. At the Institute of Applied Biology, I was able to prove for the first time that all plant-based foods have all 8 essential amino acids. Therefore, there is no need whatsoever to indulge in any animal proteins because you're getting all you need from plants and much healthier. So I hope that the people who have stated they're eating organic beef or organic chicken from free-range hens understand that that animal is still being raised for slaughter and there is no need for it. It's we who have to change. But now you're going to be eating beef, if you eat beef, from grass that may have Roundup on it. Just be aware of that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you, I'm Gary Nall. In a moment, we're going to hear from the Canadian government's advice to the citizens of Canada on their official website about asset forfeiture in the United States. And it's rampant. It's billions of dollars a year that they're stealing. And now that we just accept it, we shouldn't. And I'll give you the latest on that in a moment. And then I'm going to share some thoughts about my disappointment in all 100 of our U.S. senators, and specifically Bernie Sanders and the leading corporate Democrat who has some nice things to say on a few issues, and the rest of it is just as corporate as it can be, Elizabeth Warren, who also voted for this. They all said, you know, yeah, it's Israel has a right to defend itself. Someone should have had the courage to stand up against AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and say, let us look at this in the larger context. What is the likely outcome? What is the history of this? And what have we done to engage in this? But they didn't. But there was a senator who did stand up. And now that there is some semblance of peace, have you seen the destruction of the homes, the roads, the infrastructure, the water? People are starving to death. They have no medical supplies. Has anyone paid attention to this? We'll get to that. But first, I just want to take a moment to say that this coming Sunday, there's going to be a march. Now, the outcome of the march, no one knows. There'll be a lot of people, anywhere between 100,000 to 200,000, they're predicting. I don't like to do general marches like this. I like specific marches because at least then you're drawing attention to a specific cause. You have speakers who are expert on the topic who can show you the problem and the solution. You gather in front of the actual building or bank or whatever it is, and you protest. You hand out literature and you try to inspire the media, those at least that are willing to cover it, to hear what your concerns are. More often than not, it doesn't lead to anything, except it can lead to other people who are not aware of the issue becoming more enlightened and therefore, hopefully, no longer participating in whatever it is. Even last night, Bill O'Reilly was concerned, but chose not to do anything about it, about the fact that the T-shirts he gives out are made in Bangladesh. That was an issue that came up. He's, well, you know, that I'm not happy about that. Well, then change it. Do you know what it is like? Why don't you fly to Bangladesh and spend one working day, Bill O'Reilly, one day, with a woman in Bangladesh earning 14 cents an hour and see what she has to go through? Then ask yourself, why did you allow this to happen since you've known this is a problem? Be in another person's shoes instead of your own. Being concerned means nothing. You see, a lot of people, if you had a march saying, we're against war, we're against suffering, we're against corruption in politics, we're against beating women, everybody would show up and everybody would say, yeah, we're for this. It means nothing because it's not specific. You have to have something that's specific that people can attach the energy to and then try to make change. So that said, the actual meeting at the UN will be completely compromised. It's totally foregone conclusion. Nothing will come from it except platitudes and promises. But we've had 1,000 of those platitudes and promises from presidents, prime ministers. Nothing changes. Nothing will change. We've also had a lot of corporate polluters who've infiltrated both the march as sponsors and also will be represented at the UN. So this is highly compromised, but it is still worth attending because there'll be some grassroots groups that will be sharing their insights. What we're doing is the general BA audience will be meeting at 10 o'clock at Lincoln Center, at the Fountain in Lincoln Center, and then going from there. My audience is going to meet at 83rd and Broadway in front of our office, and we'll be meeting anywhere between 10 and 11 o'clock. So if you're a little late getting in, don't worry. I'll be the last to leave, so everybody go over. Bring signs. What's our emphasis? Just having something on climate change is like saying we're against corruption. It means nothing. But we want to be against GMOs and the labeling of GMOs. So what I'm doing is I'm trying to prepare 20,000 documentary copies to give out. We'll be giving little shoulder bags to the people who show up, so the people who you feel, and talk with them first. Say, would you be interested in knowing the truth about GMOs and why we should be labeling our GMOs? And if they say, no, I'm not interested, don't give it to them. If they say, yes, they're interested, they don't know the facts, we'll give it to them as a gift. I'm doing this out of my pocket to help the larger GMO cause. You see, if you have 5,000 different ideas all floating at once, nothing's going to stick. We have to have at least, I believe we can influence people on a few issues, maybe two or three, and get them enough information by the time what we share with them and others share with them, people will go home and actually do something. Because otherwise, you know what happens? Let me tell you the fact of this. On Earth Day down in Dallas, I was a keynote speaker. There were thousands and thousands of people, as far as the eye could see, people. I've never met so detached from reality people. The music was fun, but there was hamburgers, hot dogs, french fries everywhere. There was colas everywhere. There was pollution everywhere. And this is an environmental group on Earth Day. Then what is the point of it? Everybody goes home and nothing changes. We have got to realize that if we're going to have a better health movement or a better environmental movement, we have to do our part. The government's not going to do it. Corporate America's not going to do it. So we stop eating meat. That helps. We stop using the plastic unless it's biodegradable. That helps. We and them, all the things that we as individuals can do, we stop buying in box stores. We stop shopping in their stores. We stop buying their product. We stop watching their television. And then when you start realizing how many things a person can do that really will make a difference, if enough of us do it on climate change, that is what we have to be the example. And I know people in this audience are, many of them, the example. So come at 83rd and Broadway. We'll have our own contingent. We've always had thousands. And I believe we'll have a large group and we'll join with all the others. And it'll be a nice happening. And hopefully we'll be able to help inspire some thought, learn some things, share, and work as a coalition together. That's between 10 and 11 o'clock. Because we just have to walk two blocks from here. We're not going to run down and be in the front. Don't want to do that. You know, let the people organize it, do all that. We can go to the back or anywhere in between. It's only a 3-minute walk from my office to where the parade's going to be. And we'll participate. It's a common synergistic energy. Okay? Now, tomorrow night, for those of you who pledged to BAI and did not, unfortunately, because they spent the money on other things instead of what they were supposed to, your premium. So this is just an open invitation. I was going to have dinner and either a Broadway play or an art movie. We're still going to do it. We'll be meeting at 6 o'clock. If you want to join us, you pay your own way. But you don't. It's just whatever the cost of a movie and a meal or cost of a movie and Broadway show. And we'll see what everyone wants to do, and that's what we'll do. It'll be fun. I did it last week for all the people who pledged and didn't get their pledge, and that's all done. So we have a couple more, so that's open. You'll call 646-926-5422. You want to join us. Let's listen now to what the Canadian government is telling its citizens about coming to the United States.
And the Canadian government has issued a warning to their citizens of what some have described as a shakedown perpetrated by U.S. law enforcement agents. The official Canadian government website claims that civil servants ranging from local police to federal agents working for their neighbor to the south are illegally seizing cash and goods from tourists. RT's Alexei Yaroshevsky brings us the details.
If you go to the official website of the Canadian government, you may read an advice about traveling to the United States, suggesting that there's no limit on cash you could be carrying around in your pocket. But still, the government says that it is not advisable to have many cash on you because banking could be problematic for non-U.S. Residents. And this advice just received an absolutely new meaning. The CBC service in Canada is reporting on a huge shakedown happening in the United States, and the perps are wearing uniforms. Different sort of law enforcement representatives, from federal agents to state troopers on the roads, are literally ripping money off people on the roads. It happens in a way that they stop your car for a minor infraction, like changing lanes without a signal. The offense is not relevant at all. Then the officer has a chat with you and asks to have a look inside your car. If he finds any cash in your car, then he asks you to prove that this is not a money laundering case or you're not involved in any drug transportation or terrorism. If you cannot prove it, the cash is likely to find itself in the pockets of an officer. The investigation by Washington Post just recently suggested that ever since 9/11, when the law enforcement officers were giving additional tools and additional means in this country, there has been in excess of 61,000 strippings of cash without any proper search warrant. And the total bill for that amounts to a staggering $2.5 billion. Now, the CBC even gives a string of advices for those traveling from Canada to the United States. For instance, being very polite with the officer and not letting him search your car without a search warrant, because in the eyes of a cash-hungry cop, you may be a rolling ATM. Some cases that listed by the Washington Post are truly astronomical. One businessman was relieved of $75,000 in cash while he is on his way to pay for a restaurant he was willing to buy. Another graduate student lost $2,500 he lent from his dad for the trip. And there's been a number of cases like this. In fact, less than a half of all the money stripped by the people in uniform over the past 13 years amounted to less than $8,800. The other sums were much.
So that's what we have. I'm doing a whole hour on asset forfeiture coming up. I thought you would find this of interest. This is from Mel Schwartz from Waking Times. It's called, Is Our Society Manufacturing Depressed People? It's short. Quote, an epidemic of depression. Our society is in the throes of a virtual epidemic of depression. The numbers of quiet people are growing when they're depressed. More than 20% of American population will experience at least one episode of what we refer to as clinical depression. We need to look deeper into this phenomenon, to understand it, and to overcome it. My contention is, firstly, that our cultural values and means induce us to live in ways that are indeed depressing. Secondly, much of what we refer to as clinical depression is inaccurate. Most depression is situational. The symptoms of depression are often due to depressing circumstances, not disease. In other words, under certain circumstances, it makes sense to be depressed. Have we lost our way? Many of us live dulled lives, somewhat robotic in nature and devoid of deeper meaning and purpose. Our lives often become visionless and passionless. We live in an intensely competitive culture that rewards achievement and success. Our identity and esteem become reflections of these external markers of achievement. Our pursuit of happiness and well-being become terribly misdirected. The demands of our intensely and neurotically driven culture strain our emotional and psychological balance well beyond its comfortable balance. The cultural paradigm in which we live leaves us disconnected, disenchanted, and isolated. When this occurs, we tend to honor and seek material acquisitions at the cost of devoting ourselves to intimate and loving relationships with others and ourselves. People that thrive in loving relationships don't typically feel depressed. Depression is symptomatic of feeling isolated and cut off. In our drive to live the good life, we typically isolate ourselves from relationships that might nourish us. Intimate and loving relations have become somewhat marginalized and have lost value in our very hurried lives. Our frenetic pace of life sees one day blur into another until life begins to lose its meaning. We don't have time to nurture our loved ones or ourselves, and we lose our vision of a well-spent life. In fact, the problem is that we don't know how to live well. In conclusion, our therapeutic community attaches labels such as dysfunctional to people and families. People who are not dysfunctional. Social systems are dysfunctional. People suffer and experience pain. We are human beings. We are not machines that are dysfunctional. Such terminology expresses contempt for the human spirit. A society that produces such staggering rates of depression is dysfunctional as a society. Our culture has created this epidemic. And part of the problem is that we become corralled into a consensus of belief that does not serve our higher purpose. The desire to fit in, to conform, induces us to lose our inner voice. We are products of a cultural belief system that ignores or devalues matter of the heart and then turns and points its accusatory fingers at those who suffer. Finally, from Jack Boas at Alternet, an article entitled, "Even After the Latest Gaza Horrors, No U.S. Senator Dares Question Israel's War Machine." Quote, "As a Holocaust survivor, I never thought I'd see the day that our government, from the commander-in-chief on down, would kowtow to absolute obedience to the dictates of the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, APEC. More powerful than all corporate lobbyists combined, APEC recently had all 100 senators goose-stepping to its edicts, every single one signing off on a resolution affirming Israel's right to defend itself, or weigh in newspeak, justifying the merciless battering of a virtually helpless population. To be sure, the right of nations to self-defense is a well-established international principle, but so is the right of to resist oppression. But whereas nations habitually invoke the right of self-defense to cloak aggression, Hitler, too, claiming he was defending Germany, no such ambiguity can be said to exist with regard to the right to resist oppression, inasmuch as the oppressed are the ones with the boot on their necks and not the other way around. Back to our government's unqualified support of Israel, so complete do our elected representatives identify with Israel that every ideal America professes to live by, freedom, liberty, equality, justice, as in the forever stamps, are put away like childish things. Let's rule out one interpretation from the start, atonement for our government's role in bearing refugees from Hitler's Germany during the 1930s. And then he goes on to talk about that. And finally he says, as far as standing with Israel as, quote, the only democracy in the Middle East, isn't it about time that we put that old chestnut to bed once and for all, given our support for such vile regimes as Egypt and Saudi Arabia, to say nothing of Israel's treatment of her indigenous Arab population as second-class citizens? So what's behind this caving into APEC from one generation of our elected officials to another? It's not a mystery. The overwhelming reality is that Israel is the most important outpost of U.S. military might in the Middle East, a camouflage base, but a base nonetheless, one of hundreds dispersed throughout the globe, 662 in 38 countries alone. Since Israel has no oil, it's difficult to come up with a more plausible explanation. As history has shown again and again, Israel can do no wrong. It can gobble up Palestine land. It can lay siege to Gaza and limit the amount of food that can either enter. Most of all, it can make war on the ghettoized Palestinians, killing over 2,100 civilians, including 500 children of all ages in the latest bloodletting, and all of it without the U.S. blinking an eye. Winking instead, the U.S. pours enormous quantities of sophisticated weaponry into the pipeline to Israel, more than enough to pulverize Gaza many times over, even as Israel breaches one international law and human rights convention after another. Now here's a senator, but not in the United States, but in Ireland, who had a different point of view.
Blast, what for? what can Shannon Aaron do? Well, the answer is, in the international context, nothing. You know, nobody will pay that much attention to what Ireland does. But the only reason I looked for a recall of the Senate was because I remember being in Palestine some years ago in an area that was heavily controlled by the Israelis, and I said to my Palestinian hosts, you know, there's nothing I can do. You know, I will have no effect. And they said, but at least you will be a witness. You will be a record to our suffering, and we will not go unnoticed. And it's for that reason that I called for the recall of the Senate. I'm very sad. I mean, I'm not anti-Israeli. I'm not anti-Semitic. I supported the State of Israel. But in the 40 years I've known the State of Israel and sometimes had a home there, I've seen it completely change. It changed from a left-wing, socially directed country to an extreme right-wing regime that is behaving in the most criminal fashion and defying the world and unscrupulously using the Holocaust to justify what they're doing. And it's time that rag was torn away from them. Israel is afraid of Palestinian unity. That's what all this is about. It has nothing to do with the murder, which is appalling, of those three Israeli kids. It's nothing to do with it. The Israeli police knew that Hamas had nothing to do with it before this war started. And with regard to Hamas, Israel created Hamas in order to split Fatah. And so they're responsible for Fatah. And I had that confirmed at the highest level in the foreign ministry in Jerusalem some years ago. And I have to say, it is astonishing to me that the West prates about democracy. Every time an Islamic government crops up around the Mediterranean, they refuse to deal with it. They subvert it. They destroy it. Where's the democracy in that? We may not like it. You know, they may be antagonistic, and my Jewish friends or my Israeli friends say to me sometimes, how would you fare as a gay man in any of these? Oh, I know exactly how I'd fare, but it doesn't mean that it is correct to deny people the right to choose their own government. What self-respecting or sane people would allow their enemies to choose their government for them? Can you imagine it happening in this country? I certainly cannot. And America has a shameful role to play in this. Israel could not get away with these disgraceful acts of international piracy and brigandage if it wasn't for the protecting shadow of the United States of America. And I condemn President Obama for his utter inaction. And I have to say, I was taken a bit aback when I saw that they'd added in Ukraine, which is irrelevant. It's a bit of whataboutery. What about Syria? What about the Congo? What about Iraq? What about everything? Well, we should focus on this. The one thing it does, Minister, is it shows the extraordinary discrepancy. At the instructions of the Americans, we're prepared to boycott, to go in after the Russian banks, to do this, that, and the other. And what do? About Israel? We don't even mark a protest note with our vote in the Human Rights Commission of the United Nations. I think that's shameful, absolutely shameful. And as I interjected, it'd be better to be one country in the right than with all the rest of them in the wrong. There are no words to describe what happened yesterday in Jabalia. Six attacks on schools, and these are deliberate, I have no doubt. Because you had 3,300 people sheltering there. They'd been directed there by Israel. The coordinates were given 17 times. How could anybody claim that they didn't know what they were doing? Israel's policy is shoot first and weep afterwards. Oh, did we hit children? What a terrible tragedy. Nobody believes you anymore. You're doing this to exert pressure on Hamas. But I tell you this, you will not resolve this problem until, as we did in this country, you involve both of the participants. There's no point in having any kind of an alleged truce that only has one side in it. It was laughable, the rubbish produced by the Israelis, the Americans and the Egyptians. They didn't consult Hamas. I mean, that is just utter, absolute madness. And Tony Blair was involved in it. My God, that man is shameless, utterly shameless. He should keep his face out of the Middle East after what he and George Bush on the other side, done. Yes, there were three mothballed schools used to store weapons. But this was discovered by the UN and reported by the UN, not by the Israelis. Then there was a situation where entire families are obliterated. In one case, 20 members of one family slaughtered. And the children, the disproportionate amount of women and children killed in this situation is a violation of all the spiritual beauty that Judaism stands for. The respect for life, the fact that if you save one life, you save the universe. All this blown out of the window. And blown out of the window, as I saw, by the arrival of 1,200,000 extremely right-wing former citizens of the Soviet Union. And can I just say this? I think it's time people told the truth about what people are saying in Israel. For example, Interior Minister Edi Yishan in 2012 saying they're going to send the Gaza back to the Middle Ages. Defense Minister Matan Vilnai said they were going to visit the Holocaust on the Palestinians. That's Nazi talk. I'm not saying that that man's a Nazi. He's describing himself as a Nazi. What to do? First of all, remove the embargo. That has to be done. Then, the Euromed agreement. I mean, there are human rights protocols attached to this. Time after time in the Foreign Affairs Committee, I've asked for this to be monitored. They won't even monitor the human rights agreements. What human rights are there when there are thousands of women and children being killed and injured? Israeli goods, particularly from the settlements, should be boycotted. And I believe there should be an expulsion of the Israeli ambassador. I delayed in saying this, but he has his fingers in his ears all the time. And he just repeats slogans from Jerusalem. 1 minute, thank you very much. I've had a very considerable volume of correspondence.
And that was a senator who had something to say. We had 100 senators who said nothing. I want to thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Now let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. One of your listeners emailed me an article from a fashion magazine this morning, and I read it, and it's very disconcerting, and it really does reinforce a lot of the things that you've been saying, and that's why they sent it to me. It's an article about three high school friends, three girls from West Virginia, and they're Twittering all day long how bored they are. They love the Hunger Games. They're obsessed with it, and two of them had a fight with one of them, and they Twittered, "We should kill her." So they invited her out, and at 12:30 in the morning, she snuck out, they got her drunk, stabbed her to death, and dumped her body in a forest. It took over a year to find her body. I'm just summing up this whole thing. And they interviewed the girl since they were her best friend, and they were very vague about what happened. And finally, out of just pressure, one of them confessed in order to get less jail time. And the girl who did the stabbing finally confessed in gross detail what they did to her. And all she asked was that she not be placed with any mean people in jail. Both of them ended up with life in prison. The one who did the first confessing ended up with less time. And I guess what's so disturbing that it's disconcerting to see that so many of our youth can be brainwashed in their Twitter worlds. And they clocked in 870 Twitters a day on these girls' Twitter accounts. And they do things without any moral compass, without any consciousness. And it shows the potential of how we can dumb down our youth with social media and how it's kind of used against us instead of something that could be productive for us. And it was a very disturbing article to read. Especially in a fashion magazine. So I just wanted to see if you had any thoughts on that.
Go back to the Hunger Games. What does it say when one of the most popular films, now two separate films, and going on the third in a series, focuses upon the entertainment value, the joy, the excitement of watching young kids, all of them young, have to hunt and kill each other till there's only one survivor? All of which is to the joy of the audience. Now look at the average gladiator show. Look at the fighting shows. They're becoming more extreme because once you accept that people have gotten used to something, you then have to do more to keep their attention. And so what you have then is you have people intentionally going to extremes, pushing the boundaries of ethics, decency, morality, manners, and hence almost a reversion back to the barbarity of the gladiator and the culture of the gladiator in Rome, and the public's vicarious passive spectator nature of witnessing and finding some excitement, some redemption of their life through watching others fight and kill. So it's not difficult if you don't have good parents that are there to show you that there's a life beyond your Twitter and restricted, limited cell phones and all, take it away and have people communicate. Because these kids could not have done all this in a vacuum. And where were the parents? And why weren't the parents watching, communicating with them, and seeing that they had these tendencies? So that's all I have to say on that. We're out of time. Thank you, Luann.
Okay.
Let's say hello to Utrece Leet. Hi, Utrece.
Hi, Gary. Today it's Free Your Mind Friday on Leet Stories, and listeners have their say.
Coming at you right now, Utrece Leet.
Yeah.